From StoryFlow, this is your daily audio brief for July 7th. Riley here, July 7th. The news in 10. Let's start at home. Let's get into it. First, from Crypt Briefing, Iranian lawmaker calls for response to ceasefire violation amid 2026 conflict. Hey, I just wanted to share something with you. So, there's this Iranian lawmaker who's calling for a response to a ceasefire violation in the ongoing conflict. What's interesting is that this might actually destabilize Iran's regime, which could have a ripple effect on the global stage. It's not just about the conflict itself, but also how it might impact the geopolitical landscape. I've been thinking about how this could influence prediction markets, to all the betting on the outcome of the conflict. Next, second, from Beer Biceps Skillhouse Newsletter, Midnight Edition, The Creator's Decision-Making System. Dear creators, this is not our usual newsletter. It's a midnight note for every creator lying awake, thinking about the next move, the next idea, the next platform, and wondering which direction is actually worth taking. Tonight, let's talk about the decisions that quietly shape a creator's career. Open Instagram for 10 minutes and you'll find 10 different versions of what you should be doing. Start a podcast. Post more reels. Build a newsletter. Launch a course. Create long-form content. Build a community. Use AI. Become a founder. None of this advice is necessarily wrong. Up next, third, from Historical Snapshots, The Day the Mona Lisa Disappeared. On August 22, 1911, painter Louis Bayard walked into the Salon Carré of the Louvre and found four iron pegs and a blank wall where the Mona Lisa should have been. He asked a guard, who assumed the painting had been taken to the museum's photography studio. Hours passed before anyone realized the Mona Lisa was missing, and it was later discovered that it had been stolen the day before. The thief, Vincenzo Perugia, was an Italian house painter and glazier who had worked at the Louvre in 1910. He knew the museum's layout and had previously installed protective glass over several prized paintings, including the Mona Lisa. On August 21, 1911, Perugia entered the museum in a white smock, lifted the painting from the wall, stripped away its frame and glass case, and walked out. The theft made headlines across Europe and beyond, with borders watched and ships and trains searched. The police questioned several people, including the poet Guillaume Apollinaire and a young Pablo Picasso, but they had nothing to do with the crime. The painting was eventually recovered in Florence in 1913, after the thief, Vincenzo Perugia, contacted a Florence antiques dealer with a letter claiming to be from Leonardo da Vinci. Perugia was arrested and later sentenced to just over a year in prison, but the sentence was reduced to 7 months. The painting was returned to the Louvre in January 1914, where it was greeted by over 100,000 visitors in the first 2 days after its rehung. The theft had turned the Mona Lisa into a global phenomenon, and it remains one of the most famous paintings in the world today. And then, fourth, from Beta Kit, Canada's telco and banking incumbents form AI consortium. Canada's big banks and telcos are teaming up to tackle their AI infrastructure issues. Scotiabank, Sun Life, TELUS, and Lightworks are forming a new group called the AI consortium. They'll work together to create solutions to the challenges they face when implementing AI, like building and governing the necessary infrastructure and intellectual property. The consortium will allow its members to share their engineering and research efforts, and when they develop new intellectual property, all members can use and benefit from it. This approach is similar to Simcar, a group launched by Canadian banks in the 90s to avoid redundancies in check processing. Lightworks, a Toronto-based consultancy, is leading the consortium. They secured funding from a venture firm last February to bring together large regulated entities to build standards for enterprise AI deployment. The consortium has been in the works for 18 months, and other companies are invited to join. The AI consortium's first project is the Agentic Control Plane, which will help members see and manage how AI is being deployed in their organization. Future projects include the AI Operations Center, which will improve AI performance and cost management, and the AI Token Exchange, which will simplify access to sovereign AI factories. This collaboration could lead to more efficient and effective AI deployment in Canada's banking and telco industries. By working together, these companies can avoid redundancies and create solutions that benefit everyone involved. Next, fifth, from Ali Watch. The Ali Watch Startup Daily Funding Report, 7/7/2026. Norm AI, a legal AI platform, just raised $120 million in Series C funding led by Kosla Ventures, with participation from top investors like Blackstone and Bain Capital Ventures. This brings their total funding to $260 million since founding in 2023. They're automating legal and compliance work for regulated companies. M1X Global, a fintech company, raised $5.5 million in seed funding led by Paradigm, with Breed VC also participating. They help governments issue and manage sovereign debt on public blockchains. This is their second funding round, bringing their total to $8.5 million since founding in 2023. Advance, a fintech platform, raised $4.25 million in venture funding to simplify premium payment collection and management for insurance agencies and brokers. They've now raised a total of $12.8 million since founding in 2024. The funding was led by five investors, with a total offering of $5 million. Octazy, an AI platform, raised $3 million in seed funding led by Surface Ventures, with participation from Remarkable Ventures. They automate clinical trial data cleaning and review for pharmaceutical companies. This is their first funding round, and they were founded by Amit Patel, Cedric Odge, and Matthew Puri in 2023. Up next, sixth, from Design Milk, Spinabec turns eelgrass offcuts into modular acoustic wall tiles. Spinabec's sold fragments are modular acoustic wall tiles made from eelgrass offcuts, a byproduct of their larger eelgrass-based products. These offcuts are recomposed into tiles with unique textures and variations. The tiles have a noise reduction coefficient rating of 0.70, making them suitable for workplaces, hospitality settings, and residential interiors. The eelgrass used in sold fragments is harvested from Denmark's coastline, where it washes ashore after its natural life cycle. This sustainable material has been used in architecture for centuries, with settlers on the Danish island of Liso using it to build thatched roofs in the 1600s. The tiles feature soft, rounded edges and chamfer detailing for precise application, and come in two coordinating variations to create different installation patterns and scales. Spinabec aims to honor the story of eelgrass by creating products with a long lifespan, recyclability, and the potential for repair, disassembly, and reuse. Sold fragments offer a subtle yet effective way to add dimension and visual rhythm to a space, while celebrating the natural character of a sustainable material. They can be installed in a variety of settings, from open-concept offices to compact cafes, to create a unique and acoustic-friendly environment. And then, seventh, from Crypto Potato, Bitcoin Records' worst June in 4 years is a cyclical bottom in play. Hey, I just read this thing about Bitcoin and it's got me thinking. So, June was a really rough month for Bitcoin, with the price falling to a fresh cycle low of $57,800. It's the worst June since 2022 and the second worst since 2013. Analysts think it was partly because spot demand and institutional flows both faltered, and that's what usually drives the market. Now, here's the interesting part. Historical data suggests that July could be better for Bitcoin. But it's not just about seasonality. The asset needs sustained spot and institutional demand to recover. And right now, that's not happening. In fact, there were six consecutive weeks of outflows from Bitcoin ETFs, which is the longest streak on record. The analysts at Bitfinex think that the plunge might have been a failed breakdown rather than a sustained leg lower, and that spot demand has started to return at marginal lows. But they're still cautious, saying it's too early to tell if the cycle lows are in. They think it's only when the demand engines are repaired that we'll see a broader sustainable recovery. Next, eighth, from Protos, Nasdaq arthritis company holding Moshe Hojik crypto hits all-time low. Instead of labs, it poured over $200 million into the RAIN token, a government's coin on Arbitrum that the company billed as a prediction markets Uniswap. The twist is that RAIN is linked to Moshe Hojik, the Israeli entrepreneur now under a massive fraud probe, and on-chain sleuths have been flagging the token for risky liquidity ever since. And Lytix, the biotech that spent a decade developing arthritis treatments, rewrote its playbook in late 2025 and turned its balance sheet into a digital asset treasury. On paper, the RAIN stash looks huge, about 78 billion tokens worth roughly $1.2 billion. Which is more than 10 times Enlivex's market cap. In reality, the token trades thinly, and a big sell-off would likely fetch far less. The company's shares have been sliding ever since, hitting an all-time low of 42 cents, a 94% drop over 5 years and a 30% dip this year alone. Even investors who bought at the $1 private placement are seeing their stakes halve. The bottom line is that the pivot to a crypto-heavy treasury hasn't insulated Enlivex. It's amplified exposure to a token tied to a founder under investigation, and the market is punishing the mismatch between paper value and real liquidity. Up next, ninth, from the Present Age. Go ahead, try and tune him out. Trump's team stepped into the Men's World Cup after striker Fuller in Balogun was shown a red card for a collision that the referee missed on the field. The rulebook says a red card means an automatic one-game suspension, which would have kept Balogun out of the round of 16 against Belgium. Within hours, senior officials from the White House, the Commerce Department, and the president's son who runs the World Cup Task Force were on the phone with FIFA leadership, trying to find a way to keep the player eligible. President Trump called FIFA President Gianni Infantino directly, and a few days later the disciplinary committee paused the suspension and placed Balogun on probation instead. The decision sparked outrage from UEFA, the Belgian Federation, and former players, who called the move unprecedented and unfair. Even though the United States eventually lost 4-1 to Belgium, the episode showed how the president can bend the rules of an international sport to suit a national team. The article also points out that this isn't the first time Trump has inserted himself into major events. He attended an NBA Finals game in New York, turning a normally open street scene into a heavily secured zone, and his presence was met with boos that he later described as cheers. Those moments, combined with the World Cup interference, illustrate how the satire of a 2017 Onion piece has become a reality where the president's influence feels inescapable. And then, 10th, from Startup Digest, Vertical AI is eating SaaS the trillion-dollar shift founders can't ignore. I've been thinking a lot about the AI space lately, and I'm convinced that most founders are chasing the wrong prize. They're racing to add AI features, launch chatbots, and slap a nice UI on top of an API call, but that's not a company. That's a feature. The market has already started punishing shallow AI products. Companies like Chegg collapsed after ChatGPT made their core service redundant, and the software industry lost $2 trillion in market cap. The problem is, generic AI tools are becoming worthless. They're not generating insights, they're just summarizing data. But vertical AI companies are a different story. They're posting net revenue retention above 130%, deal sizes 2.9 times larger than generalist competitors, and retention horizons 3.2 times longer. The key is to build a moat, not just a tool. A moat is a proprietary workflow that no foundation model update can touch. Take Sierra, for example, a customer support agent company that charges per resolved ticket, not per seat. Or Harvey, a legal discovery and case law prediction platform that understands jurisdiction-specific case law and predicts the likelihood of a judge's ruling. These companies are valued at 15x to 20x ARR because they replaced a human with an agent. The math is clear. Vertical AI companies are pulling in trillion-dollar attention. A16z estimates the global vertical SaaS market at $450 billion, with 30 to 40% of it likely reshaped by AI agents between 2026 and 2028. And it's not just about the numbers, it's about the language. Vertical AI is a shift from tools to agents. It's not enough for AI to generate insights. It needs to operate inside a real workflow and take action. So, how do you find your vertical wedge? Start by picking one workflow, not one industry. Measure your automation rate. 60 to 80% task completion without human intervention is the threshold for economic viability. Price against the human cost you replace, not against seat count. Build the data moat before the sales team, and track reliability obsessively. An agent that works 90% of the time is useless to an enterprise. Most AI agent startups are not building software. They're quietly running a remote workforce with extra steps. If your autonomous agent needs a human to step in every four tasks, you're not scaling a product. You're managing headcount with a friendlier interface. Investors know this now, and Gartner predicts more than 40% of agentic AI projects will be canceled by the end of 2027. So, what could go wrong? Margin collapse, the production gap, latency kills deals, and agentic drift. But if you can avoid these pitfalls, you might just find yourself in the trillion-dollar shift. That's the day.